Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintos.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here in the studios of Community Radio, KHOI, in Ames, Iowa. Well, we still are not done with winter yet. However, things have been a bit milder here in Iowa. We kind of have sunshine, which helps a lot. I have a small news item to share. This weekend, the annual Bike Ride to Rippey took place. That's the Burr Ride, and it happens every year no matter what the weather, and some years it has been really, really cold. This year they had a very pleasant ride. They bicycle, they said 600 bicyclists this past weekend went from Hotel Patti in Perry to Rippey, the town of Rippey, and back again. So that was the Burr Ride. I'm glad people had a good time. So, Donna, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, we're going to start off with another live tasting test on air. Lana, here's something for you.
We are ready.
Okay. Got that noise there? This is a real live sound effect. We are eating carrots.
In February.
Local Iowa carrots.
In February.
And they're really good. So, and we're going to introduce to you two people who grow a lot of food here in Iowa. And we're going to talk about local and regional food systems. And with Jan Libby, who is a farmer, among other things. And James Nisley, who is also a grower and a farmer, among other things. So, Jan grew us these carrots. Tell us about the carrots, Jan. Jan?
Can you hear me?
There we go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep. Those are our Bolero carrots that we really grew quite a significant quantity of in the latter years of our really active growing season and career, and fed all of our CSA members and fed farmers market customers and fed friends and fed folks who buy them through Wheatfield Co-op. And they're really good storing carrots. So they're still a supply to feed our family, hanging out in our cooler, and that's what you had. So your crunching up those carrots connects you to the hillside on our land that overlooks the beautiful East Twin Lake, part of North Central Iowa, and is now working its way into the very fibers of your body, which I always think that's a fascinating way to think about the food that we grow and how you eat part of our farm, and it builds a really strong connection, not only to each other, but also to your health.
It's like Wonder Bread, builds bodies in 8 ways. Was that what it always used to say on the package? Carrots build bodies in 8 ways, at least.
Yeah, better than Wonder Bread. Diet.
Better, way better than Wonder Bread. But, you know, that is the concept that they wanted to, you know, promote,
yeah,
that what you eat is how you build your body, right?
Right.
So, thank you, Jan. They're delicious. And how long can you store carrots in Iowa in your refrigerated?
You know, we had a quantity a year or so ago that we kept for over a year, and they were still in really good shape. So this is a really good, long-storing carrot.
So that means, really. And when were they harvested, like September?
No, usually when we're harvesting those Bolero carrots, we're trying to have them just kissed by frost. So it could be late October that we're digging them out. And that just gives them a little bit of a touch of sweetening, too. They're usually a very sweet carrot, but if they can stay in the ground that long and we can still get them all out and polished up and into the storage before it gets too frozen outside, mm-hmm, then they've had that opportunity to get sweetened up just a little bit.
Okay, so that means carrots are possibly a product that could be harvested in the fall of the year and eaten in Iowa all year long, right?
Right.
I mean, the problem with growing food in Iowa is we have winter here. So it kind of, this is not California. Mm-hmm. So most of the carrots that are in the supermarket right now are, in fact, coming from California, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But we could be having more local carrots here in Iowa, among other things. Actually, the way I got to know Jan was Jan and her husband, Tim Landgraf, also grow a lot of squash, which is another winter vegetable that can be stored, and such great squash. So now, the way I got to know James, and I don't know him, but I know his food, is James over in Kelowna is growing lots of greens. So, James, tell us about your farming enterprise.
Hi. Well, I have been growing microgreens for over 25 years now, and they're like sunflower greens, snow pea shoots, daikon radish greens are the kind of especially sandwich and salad greens that are all certified organic. They're grown in soil in shallow trays.
Indoors, and, right?
Yeah, they're grown indoors.
Okay, so you can do this year-round also.
I can, yes.
So you have had to create your own marketing and distribution, right?
Yeah, I did. I think, as far as I know, I was probably the first microgreen grower in the state, as far as I know. And so I had to open up a new market, and so that's what I had to do.
Well, how did you get people to buy your, I mean, we're not talking like a little bunch of alfalfa sprouts. These are substantial. I loved when I first discovered that I could have a whole salad right here in Iowa in the middle of the winter, and you grow in rather large quantities. So where do people buy your sprouts now?
Well, in the Iowa City area, there's New Pioneer Co-op and several Hy-Vee stores. There are some natural grocer stores in the area that carry them. Wheatsfield Co-op in Ames, also Gateway Market in Des Moines. There's Everybody's Whole Foods in Fairfield.
Mm-hmm.
The New Pioneer Co-op in Cedar Rapids as well.
So your stuff is getting largely around the state of Iowa, lucky for us. So you are both part of, Jan, what's it called?
Well, we are both actively involved in, the whole network of local food partners. And together, many of those partners are coming under the umbrella of the Iowa Food System Coalition to really leverage the various different perspectives of our food system and lean in together to really be the positive problem solvers and innovators. I would say that we already have an awful lot of innovative work going on across the state, and we should touch base quickly on why this is really an issue and talk about the vulnerabilities and challenges of our food system. We've just briefly touched on just a few issues. Yes, we're growing carrots, and yes, you could have those available year-round, but we probably have a pretty fragile storage system.
Mm-hmm.
My on-farm storage, yes, that's fine. But the quantities I would need to store in order to supply a market a significant quantity and then be able to move those around is a challenge. And James has talked briefly about the distribution that he has helped to establish so that his products can reach markets.
Well, just for our audience, give me a ballpark figure. If you had to grow enough carrots to feed everyone in the state of Iowa for a year, how many acres do you think you would need to plant in carrots? This is putting aside the distribution and storage. Just how many would you have to grow?
Well, that would take a calculation that I don't have on the tip of my tongue, Donna, but I know that there has been some research in terms of the amount of land in Iowa that would be needed to feed us to try to achieve, you know, our 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. And, you know, when we look at the amount of ground in Iowa that is in agricultural production, all right, so it's about 90% of Iowa land is in agricultural production.
On some of the best farming soils in the world, you know.
That's right. So it would be like, I don't remember that statistic, it's not right in front of me, but I think it was, you know, less than 1% of that could make a very large contribution to feeding Iowans.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not about upending agriculture in Iowa. When we talk about changing our priorities and increasing our investment in our food system in Iowa, it is adding diversification to the agricultural system we have and figuring out how we can do that and be neighbors with folks that are growing, you know, the majority of the crop in Iowa, which is largely corn and soybeans. But we have land and we have access both in urban areas and opportunities in rural areas to significantly expand the production. But it's not just flip a switch. It's a whole series of interconnecting issues that have to be addressed. That's why coming at it from a coalition perspective, which really brings all of these different skills and insights to problem solving, is what's needed when you're dealing with complex issues like our food system. You know, if we talk about the challenges and vulnerabilities in our food system, we can identify that around health and food access. We can certainly identify that regularly across community needs assessments, access to affordable and healthy food is a top concern. And when we don't have adequate income to access healthy foods, then folks turn to the dominant food in our food stream, which is highly processed foods, and that has direct connections to diseases. We can look at a study that was just done in the last year or two through Iowa's Healthy Estate Initiative in partnership with Broadlands, where they were promoting produce prescriptions. And clearly documented.
Wait, better say what? Tell us what a produce prescription is.
Huh.
A produce prescription is linking medical providers directing their clients or their patients, not like here's a bottle of pills, go home and you'll feel better. Here is a coupon to go cash this in at your local farmer's market or your local co-op so that you can get access to healthy
broccoli.
Whole nutrition food, broccoli and, you know, sprouts and strawberries, and documenting the impact clearly on folks in terms of some of the markers for diabetes, people's overall feeling that they have greater wellness.
So this would be coming from your doctor saying, here's some help in getting, because everybody knows that potato chips are cheaper than broccoli.
Well, that's right. And so that's another indicator of the complexity of our food system, because it's not just I don't have access, it's some portions of our community do not have adequate income to be able to navigate all the different expenses. And when we have to make choices and the dominant food system is delivering us highly processed, highly sweetened foods, then that's just sort of a survival strategy. We need to look at how we can work together to intervene and create more opportunities for easier access to healthy food. It is going to take some public dollars support, but it also takes public private commitment and understanding and engagement in this work as well.
So I'm going to ask about the obstacles that we're facing here. Obviously, we have the land. We have good soil here. Relative to many parts of the country, we don't have problems with water. I mean, we do have a dry season now and then, but it's not like you know, parching drought. We can manage that. So, and we have plenty of farmers and people willing to do this. So the obstacles seem to be in, once the farmer grows it, how do they get it processed to the kind of thing that you see in the supermarket? Like the carrots have to be scrubbed and go in bags, and then they have to be put in boxes, and there are sanitation standards. So there's processing, and then there's distribution. How does it get from the farmer to the grocery store so we can go in and buy it? So how are we going to deal with these things?
Well, you know, I'm going to say just a few things, and then I want to hand it over to James, because he's been pretty heavily involved in a particular group that's been helping to address that issue. But I want to remind your listeners that Iowa has a rich history of really diverse crops. We can look back, and it seems like a long time ago, but, you know, 100 years ago, we were regularly seeing up to, like, you know, more than 30 or 40 crops that were being produced and marketed across the state of Iowa. That has narrowed, and we have gone down to, you know, a majority. It's not just two, but when you've got about 78% of the land in production in two crops, that's pretty dominating on our landscape.
And neither of those crops do humans eat in large quantities.
And I also want to point to some of our institutional businesses, like Lafredo's, started in about
it's a produce. Lafredo's is a produce distribution company, predominantly in Des Moines, right?
Exactly. And so that's kind of where they got their start, and they, you know, they were involved in some production in the early years, and they have grown and grown, and, you know, you see that stability in that business. They do, from my information, carry some local products, but they're also hooked into the national distribution. So they're moving food into Iowa from outside of Iowa within the United States, and I'm sure they're getting products that are from outside of the United States itself, so within and beyond. And, you know, they're working with that that distribution model, which is pretty dominant in the state of Iowa. So how do we help increase opportunities for local food producers who are raising food for your table, or for that school, or for consumption, you know, even in a hospital, if we can work with hospitals as well, or to make sure that when those doctors are offering those prescriptions that folks are going to find those vegetables available at the local grocery store or the farmer's market. So there's been a group of folks who have been managing what we call food hubs, and that is a business specifically bringing product together, so aggregating product, marketing that product, and then distributing that product. So food hubs are coming into the situation in our food system in Iowa to help facilitate that distribution.
And where do we have food hubs in Iowa?
Well, we've got them in a number of places, and James can talk a little bit more because he's been active in the Iowa Food Hub Managers Working Group and has been able to leverage some of that assistance to move his products around. So why don't I give him a chance to talk a little bit about the Iowa Food Hub Managers Working Group.
Okay. The Iowa Food Hub Managers Working Group is a group of, I think there's six or seven food hubs that are recognized and participate in this group. And we aggregate, market, and distribute local products. There's also representation from folks from the RC&D offices. In this case, it's Iowa Valley RC&D. There's also representation from Iowa State University Extension and Practical Farmers of Iowa, another nonprofit organization promoting sensible agricultural practices in the state and
so
beyond.
So where are the food hubs?
So I operate one here, and I'm, you know, in rural Kelowna. There's one in Iowa City. There's one in northeast Iowa. I believe Decorah is where they're centered. There's one in Des Moines, one in Elkhart, and another one in Harlan, Iowa. Those are the main ones. There's another one in Grinnell that's just getting started.
So these are basically places that work with farmers to bring in their product to help them get it packaged and then delivered, right? To the places.
And distribute.
So I want to jump in here just a minute. And what's fascinating is that these food hubs, they're not just operating their own entity separate from the other entity. They've been working together as the Food Hub Managers Working Group, I guess, James, for something like 10 years. And when you look at a map of the state, the food hubs that James has outlined sort of give coverage from the north, kind of on the east third of the state into central Iowa, and then Harlan sweeps it to the western part of Iowa. And they've been able to collaborate and build transportation between their different entities to be able to move product from northeast Iowa down into southern Iowa, across to western Iowa. We have a bit of a gap in northwest Iowa, but looking at opportunities to, you know, fill that area in. But building hub-to-hub network has been instrumental in the group, and particularly Iowa Valley RC&D, RC&D being Resource Conservation and Development.
Thank you.
Yeah, coordinating two new projects called the Local Food Procurement Assistance Program and Local Food for Schools. So these are two large USDA programs that got started last year and are an opportunity to move food in a very simple way from the farm through the food hubs to community members, with distribution primarily going out through food banks and food pantries and other community services.
So does this mean that the USDA is giving the money to, like, buy the trucks and pay the drivers to take the food from where it's been put into the boxes to where the people are going to have access to it? I mean, who buys the trucks? Who drives?
Yeah, well, I don't know how much this fund is paying for the trucks themselves, but they're paying for the food. James obviously can talk more because he's personally involved.
Yeah, primarily the USDA funds purchase the food. There is some compensation for distribution. More like on a mileage basis, but it doesn't pay, this program doesn't pay for the purchase of trucks or large equipment purchases.
So somebody has to, how do we get that in place then?
Either private investment or, in my case, that's what it is. Or there are some of these food hubs that we're talking about are privately owned, like my own, and some are operate as nonprofit organizations. And so some of the nonprofit organizations rely on, you know, other public funding or grant money to purchase, to make capital purchases.
Well, give me an example. How many, now, for a truck, we're not just talking you put the boxes in the back of a pickup. You have to have refrigerated trucks, right?
Correct.
So how many trucks do you have that are driving your and other people's products around the state?
I just bought a third truck. So at this point I have three, but usually there's only one truck that is going out on a particular day, but I'm expecting that this coming year, this growing season, I'll probably have two trucks going out.
Good. It sounds like there's lots happening here in Iowa. When a farmer grows things, you think you're done. You're not done when you grow things because food has to get to where people can use it.
And it's highly perishable.
It is. What a trick. Well, I want to take this little bit to remind folks you're listening to KHOI Community Radio, and this is Donalana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen, and we're talking about the Iowa Food System Coalition because it's important to manage all the good stuff that is grown in Iowa. Joining us today are Jan Libby and James Nisley, and they're talking about not only the fact that they grow things, but it's very important to get that food to where it's needed. James, you have experience on getting things into schools. That has been more prevalent lately. All of a sudden, schools seem to be more open to feeding their kids healthy food. Can you tell us about that?
I've been promoting to get more locally sourced healthy food into the school food nutrition programs for nearly 20 years now, and so I've been pushing on this issue for a while, and I also one of my field crops is growing sweet potatoes, and I have been selling sweet potatoes to the Iowa City Community School District for a number of years, and they're, you know, preparing those and serving them to the students, and that's gone really well for them. And also participating in this local food for schools program, there was a kind of a special section of that funding opportunity that is working on a pilot processing project where, because for the schools, a lot of times they don't have the staff or the equipment to process, raw
and cut up
vegetables.
Right?
Ah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so. So the initiative was to, make it easier for the schools to utilize local produce. And so I am currently working with this pilot processing project to shred cabbage into like a coleslaw cut.
Mm-hmm.
And deliver that to schools, and also sweet potatoes and butternut squash is kind of the first three items that were.
So are they going to be frozen or they're still going to be fresh?
They'll be fresh. Initially, they'll be fresh. And the reason for that, there's a couple reasons. One is that for frozen product, it requires a lot more expensive capital investment up front.
Freezers, and quick freezers.
To get the product frozen in the first place, and then, freezer space to hold the product, which mm-hmm. is something that, you know, I'm sure we're going to do down the road. But to get the project started, we're just looking at what's called fresh cut.
Mm-hmm.
And so processing these items, and then the plan is to deliver them to the schools the next day. And they're placing their orders and planning their menus so that they can utilize that fresh product.
Can I jump in here just a minute, James? Don't lose your train of thought, but just to sort of remind and lift up to the listeners as we're talking about this. So as James is talking about identifying specific crops that work for the school, that he can have the reasonable investment of processing equipment to make them even more available when they're shredded. He's talked about, not right now, but he's been telling me a little bit about the recipes that have become well-loved by the schools and how he's in a position to share that out with other schools, as there are a few other schools beyond his Iowa City connection that are starting to dip their toe into using some of his products. And it comes with that relationship between the farmer and the school. And, you know, the food hubs are, are also helping to build that competency and that confidence between those entities that make it more feasible to have the fresh and local food in the schools. So, it sort of takes a village to get this working. It takes the farmer who has the products and has the innovation to think about it, but it also takes the time of building the trust and relationships for that sale to be a long-standing commitment. And I just wanted to lift that up as we're talking about this and kind of help people imagine all the moving pieces that it requires to put some of these market opportunities in place.
Well, and especially with the schools, even if you get the food there in front of the children, then at this point in time, the children have to learn to like these foods, which is a whole nother barrier. And I think the most successful initiatives have revolved around actually having a garden in the school so the children see, oh, tomatoes grow on a plant. And having, you know, we've reached a point in our civilization where children, you know, they're used to eating Fruit Loops. So I had worked maybe 10 years ago with some cafeteria ladies as a chef, and so I went in to see what they were doing and to try to help them figure out. And they said, well, even if we make it, the children won't eat it. So then it's taken another evolutionary step where you have to find, like, the sweet potatoes probably are a very good idea. That is something. They're sweet. Children like sweets. You know, getting the product to the place is three quarters of the battle, but then you got to figure out how to make them eat it. So James, you must have some interesting experiences in choosing the vegetables and that don't have the ick factor for the kids.
We're working on that. The first priority that we looked at was what crops are readily grown here in the state that have a long season of availability, either by virtue of a long harvest season or long-term storability, and can fairly easily be grown in large quantities. And the whole presentation to the children, to the students, is also very important, and developing and sharing successful recipes is another really critical component of this. And as Jan was talking about, we're working together like with a community of support to get recipes that, you know, maybe the food service program at one school tried and was really successful, and sharing that with, you know, with other food service directors. And then another thing that we understand is really important is just how these, you know, maybe new foods to some students, how they're introduced and the importance of, you know, introducing them in a very positive manner. And and that's really important because, you know, kids will pick up on the attitudes of the adults. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's, I don't really see this as, like a immediate 100% acceptance, but it's a step-by-step process of, you know, introducing new foods and trying to get as much buy-in and, you know, positive energy behind these, you know, healthy options as what we can do. And it, I think it provides opportunity for community members to be involved and get involved with a local school lunch program and to be an advocate for, you know, these healthy recipe options.
Yes, I know. Jan, you mentioned before about doctors being able to offer produce prescriptions, actually using food to address health issues. And it seems I ran across something recently in the national news that there was new federal regulations about school lunches that they're actually thinking of, or maybe they have already, reducing sugars in school lunches. And they've never done that before. So this may be a big change here, thinking about our health, thinking about our children's health. It's a good thing too. That's great.
And we've been talking about sort of the infrastructure elements of the food system, the distribution, the storage, the processing. Well, you know, we've been talking about the importance of a coalition to bring partners together. So what the coalition has been doing over the last year and a half or so is bringing these partners together to really look at what the issues are in Iowa and start to identify those key priority areas and build the relationships between these partners to understand more about what this group is doing and how that connects with what this group is doing. And so, yes, we've been talking about infrastructure, but just the simple issues about procurement, and that's kind of been part of this conversation, too, about the schools buying food, but also looking to strengthen those opportunities with grocery stores and restaurants and other institutions where really the largest quantities of our food are consumed, looking at how do we put better systems in place to support farm and food businesses? How do we do more work to position and prioritize food as a health strategy, not just thinking that you go to the doc and you get a prescription for some sort of, you know, pharmaceutical, but instead you get directed to your, you know, community garden, or you get support to have a garden plot. You know, just thinking about new Iowans who have come into the state from countries that have agricultural background. We have a very strong program in the Des Moines area under the umbrella of the Lutheran Services of Iowa, and it's called Global Greens, which is supporting folks who are coming to Iowa as immigrant and refugees, and they have farming background, and they're getting started with community garden capacity on graduating on up to market scale production. So these are just a few examples. I think we're seeing support for farmers of color through that program. The Iowa Valley RC&D, as I understand, in kind of the Iowa City-ish area, is also giving support to farmers of color. Practical Farmers of Iowa has to recognize the diversity of producers who may have an interest in growing a different genre of food that's more culturally appropriate, and then making that available to their communities and really growing and strengthening the circle of healthy food being available through institutions like schools, through community connections, and strengthening and encouraging folks to find those opportunities to be part of this conversation. This coalition is really at the early stages of articulating what this plan that will help to strengthen and guide the coordination between partners and really guide and inform our work over the next, you know, decade as we work together.
It sounds like there's a lot of good things happening. I want to remind folks, this is KHOI Community Radio, and you're listening to the Donna Luna Kitchen. Welcome back. This is the Donna Luna Kitchen. We're talking about the Iowa Food System Coalition and its wonderful efforts to get everything kind of to make more sense here in Iowa. We want to be healthy. We want to feed our families healthy. And we want to eat good food. And Iowa farmers have the ability and the knowledge and the skill to bring us good food. We're talking with Jan Libby and James Nisley, and that's good.
Well, you know, we've had a really robust growth in farmers markets over the last 15 years or more, and that has really done us great here in Iowa, and all summer long, almost anybody can find a farmers market. But what else can our listeners do to get involved in local foods?
Well, great thing that you should ask. I think we can look at both, you know, in their role as just an individual who eats, mm-hmm. right? Important choices about where you purchase your food and helping people understand that there is a lot going on. You know, sometimes I think if you're deeply involved, it's like, oh, it's obvious, but it's not necessarily obvious if it's not just crossing your agenda every day. And farmers markets are sort of the most familiar. There are businesses called Community Supported Agriculture, CSAs. So my husband and I sold most of our produce over the 25 or so years that we were actively selling commercial production through CSAs. So a CSA is where farmers are making weekly and every other week deliveries from product on their farm, and they engage with folks who buy that and make a financial commitment on the front end. Amazing amount of diversity and opportunities as farmers have adapted different kinds of software to give the consumers more choice. When Tim and I started, it was, we'll plan what's going to be in the garden and you'll get what's ready each week. And now there are many opportunities where folks can go on to an online system and say, well, I want this box, but I want to have a little customization to it, and I want it this week, and then, oops, I'm going to be gone that week, so put it on hold, and then I'll be back the next week. So there's a lot of flexibility. There are farms that offer that kind of model on a seasonal basis during the growing season. Tim and I are now members of a business, Prudent Produce, that's selling year-round. So we have stepped onto the other side of the opportunity. There are co-ops that are supporting local producers. There are grocery stores that, you know, really need to seek out local sourcing there. And those are probably the easiest places. There are community gardens and home gardens that people can get involved in and supports for that. So thinking about that very first choice that you make about what food are you going to put on your table and how are you going to use your food dollars to invest in Iowa's food system. Well, beyond that, it's then looking at who are those community partners and what can you do to support them. James and I were talking about this the other day, and he says, you know, as simple as talking to your school food service director and simply saying, what can I do to help? And bringing in a lens of, we can work together to help make this better, not, well, there's everything wrong with our food system because we don't have the healthiest foods in our schools, but really coming in and saying, how can I help you to make some steps? And as James says, it is a long haul game. It's not a quick switch. It's building relationships and making connections. And now we've been talking today about all the work that's going on to get local food into schools. If you are in a school district that maybe is actively involved, great. Cheer them on. Advocate for that at the school board level, at the administrative level, and whatever else they may need for help. If you're in a school district that hasn't connected to some of these opportunities, then, you know, raise the question and get connected to some of these programs. And I can certainly be a starting point of helping people get connected, or they may know a more local resource. We have a strong network of local food coordinators in the state of Iowa who kind of know the groundwork of what's going on in their community and can help people get connected. And I think that's, you know, looking at talking to others, too, about how do we build a community-based vision and the support structures for supporting the local food system. It's not going to happen just because somebody over there is doing it, but it's going to happen because we're all sort of working together.
So my takeaway to motivate us all to do this is there are at least two good reasons to have more local foods. And the first one is, if we grow it and eat it and sell it and distribute it in Iowa, that money stays within our state. Whereas if we're, you know, all eating carrots from California, the money for those carrots, it goes to California. So in terms of, you know, rural development and keeping, you know, jobs and a vibrant community here in our state, the food that we eat, because we are a farming community, is really, really important in keeping the money here in Iowa. There are some astounding statistics that I cannot roll off the top of my head, but how a dollar spent on local food, how much more it stays in the community and, you know, creates wealth for our local citizens. The other issue is, you know, food is perishable. The longer it's been sitting in a truck in a warehouse and coming from California, you know, it does start to degrade. So having fresher and better quality vegetables is, you know, if you're cooking it and going to all this trouble, the better vegetables you have, the better your food is going to taste. So those are kind of, I think, two motivating factors for why consumers really need to care about local foods. Also, not only does it taste better, but the nutritional quality of a carrot changes over time, for example, or broccoli, or I'm sure James can talk about how quickly, how long do sprouts keep in the refrigerator, James?
It depends on which variety, but 10 days to 2 weeks.
Right, so 10 days to 2 weeks. That makes a difference if they spend 8 days on the road coming from a long ways away. So it's really good that we can get your stuff closer to home. We have to work for fairness for farmers, and also we have to work for the fact that more people need to be able to access fresh food.
Fairness for eaters.
Fairness for eaters. We are just getting started on this journey, I think. But it's good. It's good. I'm glad Jan and James are doing this sort of thing.
Yeah, Jan, you had an ending quote you wanted to give us on this.
Well, and I also want to give a call out to the importance of policy advocacy, you know, and talking to legislators and helping them understand how important this is, and that Iowans support this. And in fact, tomorrow, the Iowa Farmers Union is holding their Food and Farm Lobby Day, and that's running from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. So to learn more about that event, go to the Iowa Farmers Union website, and they're trying to get the final folks to sign up for that settled today. So don't wait. Get going now. To learn and get connected more with the conversations through the Iowa Food System Coalition, I will give my email as the main contact point at this point. It's very simple, iowafoodsystemcoalition@gmail.com. We are working on developing a website, but that's not quite ready. So if folks have questions, they want to get connected to our monthly updates or to our quarterly meetings. Our next meeting is February 22. And the ending quote came from a document several years ago that was wrestling with some similar issues. So it's not the first time that folks have wanted to come together to lay the groundwork for this kind of planning in the state of Iowa. So we are building on the shoulders of giants and building forward for our future generations. And I just thought this quote was a nice capturing of the issues that we're dealing with. So a local food system has many advantages, but from a traditional economic development perspective, there are two major things to consider: job creation and import substitution. There is potential for more growers, processors, and marketers. If we can do this ourselves, we can keep our dollars in our community. Theoretically, it's not rocket science, but in reality, it may be as complex. So the work that we're doing to lay the groundwork for this food system plan through the coalition, that will help navigate these kinds of complex connections. And I couldn't agree more to the sentiment that's expressed in that quote.
Very good. And also along with that, we listen to the what's going on nationally, internationally. The climate is getting more iffy, and it's good to think about resilience, not just to worry about things that might happen.
Yeah, what if those carrots can't come from California any longer?
That's true. We had a lecture from a man named Tom Philpott talking about the breadbasket, breadbaskets of the United States, California and the Midwest. But that both places are open to climate and weather things can change. So becoming more resilient is a very, very good thing.
It is. It is a sort of national security or issue and a state security issue to think about what we can do to strengthen our investment in prioritizing of growing our own food and feeding that here in the state as a first priority, and then also, you know, connecting our work in Iowa with our sort of upper Midwest region as well. We have a lot of folks living in the upper Midwest in more concentrated communities, and that creates market opportunity. But as we've already talked about, that requires, you know, working together and sometimes across state lines to reach some of those opportunities.
Exactly. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for both being with us today. We've learned a lot about our food system in Iowa. It's not just growing it. It's getting it to where it needs to go. Thank you, Jan, and thank you, Jane.
And thanks for the carrots.
Oh, and thanks for
and
the
And thanks
carrots.
For the sprouts.
Out of the kitchen.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us today. I want to mention a few upcoming things happening here. Another farm connection here, Mustard Seed Farm, has a collaborative art show coming up Saturday, February 11th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Harvest Vineyard Church here in Ames. You can find out more at mustardseedfarm.org. And the Central Iowa Barn Dance is getting its act together again. We'll be having dances in February, March, and April. Yes, we will. Go to Facebook, CIB Dance, and find out more. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you every Tuesday at noon here on KHOI Community Radio, or find us anytime, www.khoifm.org. We had music by the Barn Owl Band. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintos.
We had fine engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.